Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. It is, of course, home of the ambitious upstart. And I say that because there's a group of people out there who just want to do something bigger, always want to do something bigger, never satisfied. And the rest of the world will tell us, hey, come on, be happy with what you've got. Or wouldn't it be great if you could just have a little bit and do okay every month? We don't want that. We want to do something bigger. And that's why we listen to Mixergy interviews. That's why I bring these people on, people who built successful companies so that they could break down what they did and we can learn from them and keep improving our own companies. And the person who you're about to meet is someone who I met and got to know at a dinner recently. Went out to a dinner that a past Mixergy interviewee put together of people who are doing growth for companies. And as I talked to today's guest, I realized, boy, he's really interesting. He's got this process for doing growth. He runs a company that does growth for his clients, and he keeps dropping out of this company. You know, it just keeps running on its own. He drops out, and he does growth for other businesses. I thought that was pretty interesting, and I figured let's bring him on here to talk about how he did it. The person is George Ravutsky. He is the founder of ROI Works. It is a consulting company that offers growth in a box to startups and fast-growing companies. We'll talk about how he did it. We'll get some growth techniques from him. And we'll talk about that one company that actually didn't do so well. You know, he took a step away from ROI and boom, we'll find out what happened there and what he learned and how he turned it around. This whole interview is sponsored by HostGator. That is the company that will host your next website. And it's sponsored by the company that will help you find your next incredible developer, TopTal. George, good to have you on here.
Thanks so much for having me, Andrew.
You know what, George? I want to start off with this thing that doesn't directly relate to ROI Works, but gives people a sense of who you are. And it's the way that you sold this consulting company that you had before. You walked into a burrito place and you saw what?
I was like 20-something in the 90s. And I walked into a burrito place and I saw a bowl. This was in Walnut Creek. I saw a bowl of people's business cards. And, I was, 2 years into running this little... early web design company. And I was just trying to, hustle my way to like bigger clients. And I noticed that this card at the top was a guy named Chris Wilhelm, who was a VP at Shugart Mattson Young. It was a largest ad agency in the East Bay. And I'd seen them on the like top agency lists or whatnot. So I pulled the card out. I did what everyone would do, right? I pulled the card out and I called them up and I said like, hey, I'll buy you a burrito, but I want to talk to you because I think you guys are missing the boat in terms of web design and digital. You guys are just doing direct mail and print and radio. And he and I ended up striking up a friendship. I did some work for them, and then I sold my company to them 3 months later.
Did you say, I want to buy you a burrito, or did you say, hey, you won the burrito, let's claim it?
I may have started it with you want a burrito, but then I quickly disclosed that I really didn't work for High-Tech Burrito in Walnut Creek.
Do you, on a regular basis, go through those bowls looking to see if there's someone impressive there, or was it just a random thing?
I don't do that these days, I don't judge anyone who does or would. Back when I first started out, I had no contacts in the Bay Area. I was a 20-something-year-old kid, and I would look into bowls at hotels where I was staying when I traveled. I would look in bowls at burrito places or wherever. And if I saw an interesting card, I had no compunction about contacting them and just, talking to them about or something or getting their advice.
What a gutsy thing to do. I love that, especially if it's just a burrito. I would say, yeah, hey, you want a burrito? I got it. It's $10 to get some time with them. ROI Works. Let's get right to the dollars and cents. How much revenue are you guys pulling in a year?
Sure. Right now we're on a run rate of about 1.4 to 1.8. The reason I have this range is because we have a lot of companies come in and do a project, but the 1.4 is sort of a hard number, meaning like those are retainers that we have and they're recurring revenue. And then the additional 400 to 800K might be projects or apps we have to help redesign for people or whatnot.
I'm fascinated by how you can build to that level, which is impressive, but even more excited to find out how you can actually get this company to run on its own so you can take time away. I mean, when you and I met, you apologized for being late, and then you said, tell you what, I'll give you a free massage. I go, what do you mean a free massage? He goes, well, I'm spending a lot of time now working on this company called Soothe. They bring masseuses to your house. I go, how are you running this consulting company while you're basically, you're their chief marketing officer, right?
Yep. Yeah. I'm full time, you know, helping these guys. Yep.
Full time. And your consulting company is running on its own. And usually consulting companies depend on their CEO, depend on people all showing up because you're selling your time. Let's talk about how you got there. But first, I want to understand a little bit about what you were doing before. You were working for this company called CyberGold. I don't know how many people even remember CyberGold, but you got to remind them. What is CyberGold? Yeah. Or what was
it? So CyberGold was started by a really visionary guy named Nat Goldhaber, who currently is the CEO or the founder of Claremont Creek Ventures in Berkeley, Oakland. And he had this idea pretty early on that people's attention was really valuable. So he decided to get one of those Amazon one-click type of patents on paying people to get their attention, except CyberGold would, you know, pay you for attention as opposed to patenting a click. Nat started a loyalty and incentives company. It was sort of like a cross between Price Club and Groupon, where you would have a bunch of members and, you know, we would approach them and say, hey, do you want to switch to Earthlink as your, you know, internet provider? Or do you want to join Oprah's book club because, you know, you have, you know, teenage kids or whatnot? If they took the offer, then CyberGold would get, you know, half, let's say the cost per acquisition for that brand was $40. So CyberGold, you know, would get, let's say, 15. And then the consumer would get a $15, you know, bounty to thank them for taking the offer. And then the brand would save, you know, 10 bucks on cost of acquisition.
Was it that they were paid, yeah. Consumers were paid in cash or were they paid in CyberGold?
So CyberGold actually really used real cash. That was kind of like the difference between them and MyPoints, who was eventually our acquisition partner. CyberGold, you know, you earned so much CyberGold, and then you could transfer it to your checking account. I came on board. Nat recruited me. I sold like that digital agency I had to Shugart Mattson Young, and then I worked for them. And then Nat and I met about something, and he recruited me to come to CyberGold. I got a chance to kind of go through the IPO with them. And then CyberGold really grew pretty large for that time. It grew to about, I think it was 7 or 8 million consumers with about 20 fields of demographics and interest. We went public on the NASDAQ, acquired a couple of smaller companies, and then merged with our biggest competitor, MyPoints.
I'm looking here at an old article from April 17, 2000. MyPoints.com acquires CyberGold for $157 million.
Yep.
What's one thing, one growth strategy that worked for you back when you were doing growth for CyberGold?
Oh, that's interesting. One of the main things I learned is that a lot of the affiliates that we had, you know, were kind of useless and create a lot of noise, and kind of focusing attention on co-reg partners and affiliates that were providing 80% of the value. Mm-hmm. And then maybe going out and finding and signing up some affiliates and co-reg partners that were our own and, you know, weren't through, you know, Commission Junction or Be Free was also really valuable.
One-on-one relationship.
Yeah.
I think we might have done like an affiliate deal with CyberGold back in the day. I had this greeting card site where after you pick your greeting card, you address it, you hit submit, you're done, right? The greeting card is out the door. You're not going to send another greeting card. So what we would do is say, well, do you want to get a membership in CyberGold or something like that? And if the person said yes, well, we already had their name. We already had their email address. We just had to ask a couple of extra questions, and sometimes not even that. Person would hit submit. We'd make money for having passed that person on to CyberGold, and that person would get CyberGold for doing things online. Yep. So your growth strategy there was to concentrate on those affiliates who were doing especially well and get rid of the ones who were not and just making a lot of noise, and also cut out the middleman and go directly to your affiliates.
We didn't, you know, we respected our kind of affiliate management kind of partners, but we would find others that were very similar. So once we learned what worked really well, you know, we would try to go out and kind of sign up our own affiliates directly.
So what did work really well? But, what's an example of that?
I have to look back and remember who. This is pretty ancient history. If we wanted to kind of increase the number of moms with kids, right? Because we were one of our advertisers was Disney's Club Blast.
Yeah.
We would kind of go out and try to find affiliates that were related to parenting or somehow the right demographic, something like that.
George, is it too crass for me to say Did you become a millionaire from being at Cybergold and then lose it after that dot-com bubble burst?
No, it's not a crass question. I did not become a millionaire. I did, I did kind of initially seem to do well because there were sort of three exits involved. And I wasn't a founder at all. Like, I joined Nat and I was part of the management team, but I was not I didn't have a ton of stock. But it was really nice seeing the stock I did have go up through the IPO and then the acquisition to My Points, and then My Points sold to United Airlines. Mm. So those were all really good things to see. And then it was not so good to see the stock start crashing down. At the end of the day, I made a little bit of money and put pretty much all of it away. And it was nice for my first time out kind of participating on a fast growth startup like that. It was a really nice outing for the first time.
All right. So then you look at what you've learned and you realize, you know what? I'm really good at this user acquisition thing. I'm really good at product and user experience. I'll just do a consulting company where that's what I do for other businesses. Am I right?
Yep. That's kind of what I did. I was a little bit, you know, at like any fast growing startup, you want to take a little pause. So I said, hey, I'm going to just do a little consulting. And it sort of naturally turned into, doing work for like St. Mary's College. And
I want to find out how you found these customers. But let me ask you this. Yeah. You're leaving in 2001. We're talking about one of the worst years for any internet-based business. Where do you find your first, first of all, forget find your first customer. Aren't you walking in there going, I'm never going to find any business. Nobody wants any user acquisition. People don't want users anymore because every user costs more money and they can't make money on them.
Yeah. So, maybe I just was too dumb to know better, but, I just felt like I would be fine getting customers. When you're one person, it's actually, the biggest problem is sort of like having too many customers or having none. It's rarely in between. I got pretty busy pretty fast. I think I started working with St. Mary's College. They were competing with the University of Phoenix. And believe it or not, my dominant tactic there was print advertising.
Let's hold it for a sec. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're saying right. I feel like part of the reason why you felt confident is the work you were going to do was growth. That if you could bring a company like St. Mary's, another student, that student was going to pay St. Mary's and St. Mary's was going to be happy to pay you. That if you were doing design, it would be a lot harder. If you were doing user experience, it would be a lot harder in that space. But if you're a guy who can bring in customers, then there's always work for you. Does that sound right?
Pretty much, yeah. I felt like I could apply a kind of data-driven approach to marketing. So you could sort of plug me into St. Mary's very traditional marketing department, and I could, plug in unique phone numbers into all their print ads, start kind of optimizing their media buys, start renegotiating their media buys based on results. And to me, just because I was moving from online to print, it's all the same thing. I'm just trying to grow their business. And I was lucky that I had a wonderful client named Dean Elias, who ran the School of Extended Education and the Leadership Program. And he really said, hey, you know what? If this stuff works, go for it. And he gave me almost free rein to really redo how marketing was done for St. Mary's.
How did you get St. Mary's as a customer?
I'm trying to remember. I think almost all my clients over the last 15 years have been by referral. Another client referred me, or a venture capitalist referred me, or a former employee.
So it was just you sending out emails to people saying, I'm about to start this new business. All I'm going to do is do growth. If you know anyone who needs it, please make an introduction.
Pretty much, yeah. I think I sent out one email, if that, and I had folks asking me, can you help out? And St. Mary's just seemed like a really fun challenge. I love challenges because the University of Phoenix was spending like $10 million a month in the Bay Area, and St. Mary's and USF and other like good regional schools were like a fraction of that. And so I thought, I wonder if I could beat the pants off of Phoenix with a budget that's 1/10. Like, that sounded like a fun challenge.
So. I bet it is. All right. Quick sponsorship message, and we're going to come back and figure out how you got that, the growth for St. Mary's. The sponsor is a company called TopTal. If you need a developer or a designer, TopTal is the place to go. They've got the network of people. They are the best of the best. Let me ask you this. If you were, and I'm just asking you, George, if you had a TopTal developer build something for you right now that would be the basis of a brand new business for George, what would that TopTal developer build for you?
That's a great question. I actually would love to have a TopTal developer build for me an app that would help me find home care workers for like disabled or elderly folks to fill in. Because when your home care worker for your older parent or grandparent is suddenly unavailable, so it's kind of like Sitter City, but for home care workers. Yeah.
I see. And the reason you need it, the reason you want to build that business is because you need it personally. Sometimes you're...
Occasionally, I might have a parent, a relative, or even like some grandparents of like a good friend of mine. They're almost like family. And, you know, sometimes I find out that, oh my gosh, their caregiver fell through. I need to get someone. And these folks have to be highly trained and vetted. And they're, you know, the people are in a very vulnerable position. So I want to be able to find relatively quickly trained home care.
And so
care
would the app actually go out and scrape the names of those people who already exist? Or are we talking about a brand new app that would require you to find the caretakers and put them in the service and so on?
I think this would have to be some sort of, you know, two-sided marketplace, much like, you know, Sitter City would be, where you already, you kind of have these caretakers, but you've also gone through a little bit of vetting and kind of have their records on file. Yeah.
That's a great idea. And you know what I like also beyond the specific idea? The way you're thinking about it. You're saying, here's a problem that I've got, and I know other people have it too. I don't know of an easy solution. What if I create it? And that's the beauty of TopTal, and frankly, the beauty of entrepreneurship in general. You find a problem, you can code up a solution for it, and you can get started fairly easily, and then build it up as the product actually starts to take off. I actually think the one that you're talking about is out there. It's Home Hero. I interviewed the founder of that company.
Oh, cool.
But I like the general idea. Like, frankly, I like the idea of even having for younger kids, if the nanny can't show up for the day because she's sick, you need a nanny for the day, not a sitter, but a nanny who's going to be there for the full day. There's a lot of these businesses out there that are just screaming to be created because the problem is so painful, and most entrepreneurs don't feel it because they're not in the age group to feel it, right? They don't usually have enough experience with older parents who need home care or kids who need daycare. Anyway, I love the idea. I love your thinking about it. Whether it's that idea or something else, if you're out there listening to me and your team of developers does not have enough time to build it because you're already working on other projects, or your one developer doesn't have time to do it because he's working on another project, you just go to toptal.com/Mixergy. You let them know what you're looking for. We're talking about how do you work? Also, how many hours you want? Is this a part-time thing? Is this a one-project thing? Is it a long-term, full-time commitment? Is it a team of developers? I'm telling you, they could supply you what you need. They go into their network after they understand what you need, what programming language, et cetera. They go to their network, they find the best of the best, and they make an introduction. And if you're happy, you could get started with them right away. And if you're not, they'll find somebody else. And frankly, if you're never happy with them, fine, you could just move on to somebody else. There is no obligation. I love working with TopTal. I've been with TopTal for a long time. I recommend anyone who's out there go to TopTal. Not just TopTal, but go to toptal.com/Mixergy. When you do, you're going to see that after you pay for 80 developer hours, they're going to gift you another 80 developer hours, and they have a guarantee to make sure that you're happy. If you start off working with someone and you're not happy with them, you have to be 100% satisfied or you won't pay. But I want you to go and take a look at that page for details, because I can't summarize everything for you. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy, and you'll be happy you did. And frankly, if you want me to introduce you to my guy over there, just email me, andrew@mixergy.com. I will intro you to TopTal. All right, so you get St. Mary's, and now it's time for you to deliver. How the hell do you end up with print ads, dude?
All right, so you know, I'd done a little bit of print advertising stuff, but I didn't have a lot of experience with that. And I'm pretty media agnostic. I just look at where can I get the right target audience, the right customer for the least amount of cost. And so I noticed that University of Phoenix was spending all this money on acquisition digitally. And meanwhile, the print publications in the Bay Area were really dying. Like San Francisco Chronicle was like a quarter of its size. And the Chronicle reached all the zones where St. Mary's had their finish your degree at night kind of like locations. They were in like, I think, 10 or 12 locations throughout the Bay Area, or maybe like eight or so. So I went to the Chronicle and I said, hey, you know, you guys, you know, reach everywhere. How much is a full page ad? And so they said, well, full page ad is, you know, $40,000. I was like, wow, that's like a lot of money. That's crazy. You know, well, what if I bought 10 of these from you? They're like, oh, well, then it's like 30. I'm like, oh, a piece. Okay. Well, what if I spent like $1 million with you? Like, what if I go crazy? And they're like, well, you know, so by the end of this process, we got to about a $5,000 per print ad cost, right? Full page.
In the if product. You buy in bulk.
Yeah, all zones, right? And I said, well, I'm not just wasting your time. I'm serious. I can deliver like $1 million budget to you, right? And this is many, many, many years ago, like 2003 or so. And they were like, okay. And so I got like an opt-out clause, obviously. And I got, you know, my client at St. Mary's was really supportive of these things. And I tagged every single ad with unique phone numbers. I tried unique headlines, unique calls to action. And basically, we made the Chronicle perform like a direct response banner ad, you know. We spent, you know, I can't reveal the official number, but it was a very large amount of money. We centralized with the Chronicle, and then we used email marketing and a little bit of, kind of like events. And during that year, I think it was 2003, 2004, St. Mary's, I guess their enrollment grew like 20%. And the following year was another like 15, 20%. And meanwhile, Phoenix actually only grew like 1 or 2%. So that was pretty awesome. I felt like I kicked their ass with a much smaller budget. And
you still remember to this day. And I would be proud of that too. Now, I want to make sure that I understand something. Did you spend $1 million worth of ads with them at the end?
We spent a very large amount because I'm always discreet about it. It was maybe over $1 million.
And so when you said, how much would it be if I spent $1 million? They tell you, let's say $5,000. You sign up for that. What? Yeah. What's your eye? Your eye just did something as I said that.
Well, they didn't quite say $5,000 a piece. There was some negotiation back and forth. But eventually I got it down to $5,000.
Okay. So then $5,000, but you also got an opt out so that if you run 4 ads and you can't make enough money on it, can you at that point walk away without a penalty?
I could. But the way, I mean, obviously we all wanted this to work, right? So they understood that we weren't spending all this time negotiating with them, only to walk away after a couple ads. And so I think the risk we all took was we said, well, if you guys run a couple full page ads and we pay, 10 grand for them, if we get good, the phone ringing, then we're going to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And the folks at the Chronicle were great.
Approach. I can imagine somebody doing that for us with ads. I wouldn't say yes, but I'm also not at a point where the Chronicle was, where they were really desperate. But it makes a lot of sense. I like how you did that. And then what you did was you said that you ran a bunch of tests. Did the Chronicle allow you to run on the same day for that same, let's say $5,000, multiple ads to multiple zones, multiple regions? They did?
We could insert different ads into different zones. And so sometimes we would sort of split test. Now each zone behaves differently, but still it was like an order of magnitude. Sometimes we would do this like very different design with another very different design. So we had directionally good information.
So you had split tests within the same day.
The same day, but different zones had very different style ads a couple times.
All right. And the way you knew which one was doing well was you'd have a different phone number in each ad and you were able to count how many people came in. I could see why you'd be proud of it. And so that was your first big customer and your first big success story. True?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then you had to grow from there. How do you find your next big customer?
So basically, I kind of developed this niche in education and luxury goods. So I got this a couple other universities like Notre Dame and Namur University and, a few others kind of came to me after I did this stuff for St. Mary's. So I worked with them. But then the other kind of area was there's this little caviar company in San Francisco called Tsar Nikolai Caviar. Mm-hmm. And you could kind of find them in the ferry building. And the two founders were like these gentleman farmers from Europe. They like farmed trout and fish. And their head of PR found me just through social connections and was like, hey, we need someone who understands growth and digital. We've got the print part covered. Can you help? And so I started helping Tsar Nikolai Caviar a little bit. And from there, I got referred to like Bentley Motors, Fairmont Hotels and Resorts, BMW. And suddenly I had this like luxury niche for about 4 or 5 years. I was doing a lot of like luxury work with luxury brands.
I see. is it Kempton Place Hotel was one of your customers?
Oh my God, I can't believe you found that. Yeah, like years ago, I think long time ago, I did a website for Kempton or something. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the stuff that you did. You didn't just do growth, you also would build websites for people.
Yeah.
It looks like you did mini sites for people. You did banners for them. You did extranets. I don't know what extranets are. You did print. You did flash.
Oh my God. You dug up like an old website from those years.
All kinds of stuff. As you're talking, I'm like researching Cybergold. I'm researching your name for what you did in the past. Were you making money at that period in your life?
What's that ding, by the way,
that you get a ding every few minutes?
I'm going to turn that off. When we hit certain growth goals, I've got some alerts that go off, and we just hit a whole bunch. So,
and this is Soothe?
This is Soothe. I have some kind of if this then that or Zaps, Zapier kind of like automation things that kind of ping me when a test closes. So about five just finished. I just turned my phone off. Sorry.
Interesting. And do you usually keep your volume on during the day? You don't just do vibrate?
I usually do vibrate. I should have done that before our interview.
All right. I thought maybe there was something about the way you think that came through for that. Union Bank was a big client for you?
Yes. Yeah. So I worked with Union Bank for about a year and a half or 2 years doing acquisition. So then the other kind of vertical that came through somehow was like financial services. So worked for a few years with Union Bank doing small business loans and checking did some SEO for them. That was not as successful because it was really hard to get them to implement everything I wanted. But on the paid acquisition side, we were pretty successful.
So as a guy who would go into a burrito bowl and pick out the name of the person you want to meet, as a person who is smart enough to negotiate a deal that basically gave you a super low price for an ad that was what, an eighth of what you would have to pay ordinarily? About an eighth. You're not just hoping that people are going to spread the word about it. You're doing something. What did you do to get those early customers? Remember, you're in that hustle mode. We've got people who are listening to us who are still in that hustle mode. Give them a couple of ideas based on what you personally did.
Sure. So the number one thing I did was I focused on really getting agreement on a baseline with my customer at the beginning. You know, how are you currently performing and what are your goals? And then when I would, you know, in most cases, you know, beat those goals, reach those goals, I would come to them and say, and this was in my contract, you know, I'm allowed to say, I'm going to get you I gave you an X percent improvement against whatever it was, right? I won't reveal budgets or I won't reveal cost per action, but I can say officially in my contract with everyone I've worked with, I gave you a 40% decrease in cost per acquisition, right? Or I increased your conversion rate by X percent.
You have them agree up front that if you hit a certain percentage, you can show off and tell everybody that you did it, right? Which is how you can have a link on your website called, ROIWorks.com/results, where I still, I think, to this day can see the percentage. Yeah, there it is. Percentage increase that you got for people.
Yeah. So, and we actually have that clause regardless of like, do I hit the goal or not? I'm never going to like show off I got a 1% improvement. So basically, as long as I'm factually correct that there was like an X percent improvement in a metric, I'm allowed to say that on my site. And that's been really key because when people come to us or to me, they want dramatic results in short time frames. And that's kind of what I think ROI has become known for.
I see. Yeah, I'm looking here at your website, cardstore.com. You got a 569% increase in organic revenue in 5 months. Trinet, you increased their lead volume by 306%, 306.5, excuse me. Saatchi Art, 40% conversion rate increase in 4 months. All right, so that's one thing that you did. Tell me another. What else did you do to get clients?
So aside from just like trying to do a really good job and being allowed to say that we're doing one, the other thing I think I did was just try to give away kind of advice for free. So right now, like every Friday, I usually spend 1 to 2 hours with startups, with venture capitalists, with angel investors, and I just try to give back, right?
In person?
I do it by Skype. I do it in person.
One-on-one.
They can come Yeah, I work out of the Twitter building, like out of the runway accelerator, and folks know to find me there. Like people will come, be like, "Hey, can I get 15 minutes of your time?" It turns into 45 usually, but I just try to help. And I will tell you that probably every fourth person I do this for, you'd never think they would be successful. Like these are you know desperate startup people. These are VCs who I'm thinking like, "Ah, I'll probably never hear from this guy. He's such a big deal." But, 2 months later, 6 months later, a year later, I'll get an email, "Hey, such and such referred me to you." And so just doing this, the other crazy thing is until maybe I think right now our website's relatively up to date, but until like about 5 months ago, we spent 3.5 years without touching our website. We had like almost a non-functional website, and I still don't have any business cards. Like I don't have any. I haven't had any for 5 years.
And so what you would do is, instead of blogging about the stuff, or in addition to, I should say, because I think you also blog, or your company does, instead of just doing that, you do one-on-ones with people, and just about anyone could get one-on-one time with you if they ask for it. So if I wanted to spend 15 minutes with you and ask you about growth for Mixergy, you'd say yes, and we need to do it by Skype, or I'd come over to the Twitter building.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes if it's like a person I really can't help, I'll let them know, "Oh, this is out of my area of expertise." But if it's someone I can at least connect to the right person, I usually try to spend 15 to 45 minutes. Yeah.
I take it back. You guys don't blog. There's like one blog post a year on ROI Works blog.
We just launched our blog, and Andy, our front end developer, has like 3 posts. I'm promising myself that I'm going to publish a post next week. So,
all right,
we'll see if I follow through.
When you're starting to build a business like this, you can't keep counting on last minute creative ideas like how do I go to print instead of digital? How do I negotiate it? Right, you have to have some kind of system. Otherwise, you can't grow the business to a place where you can move away from it. Right, you can't take these, what do you call them, 3 to 6 month periods of time where you walk away from your business and it still runs. So what did you do to systemize the work that you do to allow you to take some time away?
Sure. So we actually have a process. You're familiar with Dave McClure's kind of pirate metrics, R, right?
Yeah.
R, which I love. I love Dave and everything he does for startups. So this is our system is actually an homage to R. But we call it ROAR. So instead of starting at acquisition onward, we actually start with research and optimization, and then the rest of the R is the same. So, and the reason I call
it
ROAR,
what does it break down into? ROAR means what? Research?
Research, optimization,
yes.
Acquisition, activation, retention, referral, revenue.
And that's the process that you take new customers through.
That's the process that if you do it right, there's anywhere from 1 to 3 years of work and you can squeeze dramatically improved revenues month over month over month for like 1 to 3 years if you follow this process correctly.
Do you have an example of a customer that you took through this so that I can see how this works in real life? Can you think of someone?
Yeah. So Sooth is an excellent example of this. And in this case, I can actually quote revenue numbers and kind of growth numbers because
they let you do that.
They do because it was publicized in TechCrunch. We published our revenue publicly recently, okay. So they're letting me do that. So Sooth recently landed a $35 million Series B growth round. It was largely on the basis of growth. Because we had a 20 to 33% revenue growth rate month over month for like the last, 4 or 5 months.
Okay, so the first step that you took them through was this research step, right? What does that mean?
Exactly.
What did you do to research for them?
There's two types of research kind of in a larger sense. There's quantitative and qualitative. So the first step is we create a bunch of funnels. We look at your desktop funnel, your mobile funnel, your new user funnel, your returning user funnel. We look at your app, like your iOS app funnel, and we see where are the frictions, right? From step one all the way through to, say, checkout or purchase. Mm-hmm. So now what I understand, now that gives me a bird's eye view of like where am I losing money, right? And where do I see the biggest opportunities? That doesn't tell me why, right? So the next, and the other type of kind of quantitative research, you know, involves kind of digging into lifetime value by cohorts, right? Okay. You know, and kind of like the rate of decay of different types of users.
What do you build all these funnels in? What software do you like to use?
So actually, I love to take Google Analytics and Mixpanel or Kissmetrics, depending on what people are using. And then I really like to kind of, it's like doing kung fu, right? I force myself and the management team to manually fill in, cut and paste the data for these funnels into a Google Doc, a simple Google Doc. Because I want people to feel in their bones like, oh my God, I'm losing all this money because I suck on the Android platform.
Okay.
So my little evil plan is to basically sit down and walk a CEO or a board member or the CMO. In this case, in sooth, I'm the CMO. So walk the team through, wow, this is where we're losing money. This is where we need to focus our attention.
Okay.
And then the second part is understanding why. Why are users buying or not buying? What are their unspoken objections? I'll give you one great example of a company that doing qualitative research, like totally turned them around. There was a company called Play.com, P-L-E-Y.com. It's rentable Legos, Netflix for Legos. And they had this beautiful website and this beautiful video. And they came to ROIWorks and they said, we really want you to like buy all this traffic, different channels, right? And they paid like ROI, like a really nice retainer. It was like $20K a month, right? And they said, I want you to do 5 different channels. And I said, you know, I'm a little worried because your funnel seems a little funky to me. He said, no. Our website's beautiful. Our video's beautiful. We should do it. So a week later, I come to the CEO. I'm like, hey, I can't take your money. I don't feel right. I'm buying all this traffic and it's not converting. And I know it's qualified traffic. So we cut the retainer in half to like $10K a month. And I said, give me 1 month and let me fix your funnel. So then me and our analytics director, Ian, we went to the YMCA and the Jewish Community Center and coffee shops. And we started interviewing moms with kids, right? And we would show them the website. And they would all say, I love this. My kids will no longer be staring at a screen. I can rent for $30 a month Legos, unlimited. This is amazing. So then I'd sit back and I'd just be like, great. Why don't you sign up? And I didn't give them a credit card or a special offer. I just want to see, like, I want to see what their objection was. And 9 out of 10 people said, what if I lose a piece? Do I have to pay for the whole thing?
Makes sense.
Which undercuts the whole value prop. But see, the founder, who's a dad, and I'm a dad, and the other co-founder, she's a mom, none of us thought of this. We thought about, like, are the pieces sanitized, you know? So my first A-B test, counterintuitively, was changing one bullet on the homepage. I added one bullet, so it looked odd because instead of 3 bullets under the headline, it was like 4. And the first bullet said, lost a piece, no problem, we won't charge. 98% conversion rate improvement off the first test.
From talking to potential customers, I see. And that's why you want to do that kind of research ahead of time.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So the qualitative and the quantitative allow us to form a better hypothesis to fix the funnel.
Okay. And what I'm getting from you is that you've got a process that you take customers through. And so when you're not there, the rest of the team at least knows this process. They may not go through it exactly the way you would, but they're going to walk through it in some way and they have some guide.
Oh, the team is like really senior, like, the most junior person on the team has like 8.5 years of digital marketing experience.
Okay.
Everybody's like 10, 12, 15 years. So they do a great job without me. I'm able to kind of, you know, I keep in touch. I still, you know, work a little bit and advise ROIWorks, but I'm not as involved day to day.
Okay. There's an important thing for me to talk about there, which is like, how do you get your customers in even when you're not there? But first, let me talk about my second sponsor, which is HostGator. Do you know anything about HostGator? Do you use them at all?
I have not used HostGator, but I know about them. Yes. Yeah.
They're great. They have a great rep. They're a phenomenal hosting company. So many people who I've interviewed said, yeah, I have a website on HostGator, or my website is currently on HostGator. And the reason that people like to use them is because it's so quick to get up and to get a new website up and running with them. One click install of WordPress and so many other different open source software. And they make it really cheap. I mean, we're talking about one of the cheapest packages out there by a company that's really reputable and actually has salespeople and tech support people waiting by the phone in case you have any issues. George, I like the way that I asked you a question before about what software you'd have built for you. Let me ask you this. We've seen lots of different businesses being built. If somebody was starting from scratch and all they had was a HostGator website, Is there an idea for a business that you've seen that they could copy and put on there, maybe on a WordPress site or a shopping site all on HostGator, or a membership site, which HostGator can do pretty well, really well?
Yeah, I think that either a membership site where maybe you have a course. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're an expert in analytics for small e-commerce companies, mm-hmm. and you've been pimping out your time kind of one on one, and you can only stretch it so far, and you don't want all the hassle and headache of running an agency like I've had. So let's say you want to record a bunch of really great videos about you teaching people. And you can actually take your existing blog posts, if you've written some, and do a video for each one. And you can make a membership site. Give away, maybe a third or a quarter of these for free. And if you want, like, the punchline or the second or the third in the series, it's gated, and you got to join it. And it's inexpensive. You don't make it too expensive. Worst case, it's going to drive a lot more consulting business for you. But best case, it becomes a passive income stream.
What's the best way to get new customers or new traffic to that kind of site?
So I think you could do a couple of things. You can, surprisingly, Bing PPC is, for certain verticals and certain things, a lot cheaper than AdWords. It's a lot less competitive. So I would look at Bing. I would look at some Facebook ads targeting people by interest. You can do some great B2B customer acquisition using Facebook. These are controllable things where you could spend just a couple $100, right?
Great ideas. Cool. I love it. Anyone who wants to go, wow, I don't know what it is with this cough. I think I get so excited during the sponsorship messages, and that's why I cough. I'm still recovering from a cold. So I'll say it a little softer. Anyone who wants to sign up to HostGator, you will get that tech support 24/7, 365 days a year, free site building tools, over 4,500 website templates, free shopping cart software, ideal for WordPress, but frankly, you could launch any site on it. 30% off if you go to HostGator.com/MixerG. And don't forget, you'll get unmetered disk space, unmetered bandwidth, unlimited email, so many things, unlimited email addresses, $100 AdWords offer, $50 search credit from Bing and Yahoo, which is what we were just talking about. All right, go to HostGator.com/MixerG. You'll love it.
That's a great deal.
It really is. And if you hate your current hosting company because they don't have a great deal, switch to HostGator. Revenue. So I understand now when you get a customer in, you've got a process for dealing with them. You know how you're going to also collect data from them and be able to share it because that's in your contract when you get started. What about bringing in new customers? How did you systemize your business to a place where you can get new customers even when you're not there to drum up new business?
Sure. So all of the clients I've helped over the years and some former employees of mine and business partners and a decent number of investors and VCs in the Valley continue to send me inquiries every month. So
it still comes to you. It's still you doing those one-on-ones. It's still you getting the referrals from venture capitalists. There is no other system in the business that works. Like if you die, that's it.
No, not at all. When I say they send me referrals, they might come to the ROI Works website and kind of fill out the lead gen form there. Some of them do come to me via LinkedIn or via email. And then I just, I connect in most cases, I connect them to our client services manager or our VP of analytics, and they do kind of an initial assessment. There's definitely a process to assess, is ROI Works the right choice? Can we help that client? And if it's a vertical I know well, or if it's a really interesting client, of course I'll once or twice a month take a few calls.
But George, is there someone who's going to be listening to this at your office who goes, George is totally leaving me out? What I do is the reason that we get new customers. What would they say?
I think they would say that what I said was pretty accurate. I think, you know, I have a team of folks at ROI that's really good at meeting new customers and assessing their needs. But I definitely, you know, participate a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Because it doesn't look like your site has a lot of traffic. I'm looking at SimilarWeb. You guys have very little traffic to ROIWorks.com. Yeah. Unless I'm missing something.
You know, our business is really kind of very word of mouth. You know, we get maybe 10 to 15 high quality inquiries per month. A lot of them do come to my email or LinkedIn. A lot of them come to the site.
Okay. Yeah. So you went, excuse me again. You decided that you were going to start a new business. We got to talk about that for a few minutes before we end the conversation. My next customer, where did the idea come from for that?
Yeah. So that's like my big, that's like my big learning experience. So I found it kind of a pain to measure marketing ROI for different clients across multiple channels, right? Paid, organic, offline. And so I said, you know, it'd be kind of cool if I could pull all this data from different like sources, different APIs, and then also not just do conversions, but do like, let's say phone leads, track phone conversions as well. But I got to that really like pretty good place originally by trying to do way too much in a bootstrapped fashion. I think I tried to build like Omniture or like AdStage or AdEspresso with no funding, basically, right? Like, so I basically said, well, not only am I going to like pull all this data, I'm actually going to like manage all these different ad channels. It'll be like an actual full-on enterprise software platform. And I was kind of crazy, and I tried to do this with like me and two guys, right? Me and two co-founders were like basically trying to build this enterprise software platform. And after like a year and a half, I'd wasted like $300,000 of like my savings on paying their salaries, you know, and I was not, you know, paying myself anything. And my wife saw the three of us like around our living room, like table all the time. And finally, another 6 months passed. And by then I'd spent like $400,000 of my savings, which was at the time, you know, I really didn't have much more. You know, I didn't have a whole lot saved. And I had been freshly married like about a year and a half. My wife was very supportive, but she saw the money dwindling. Then I had this epiphany. I'm like, why am I building so much? I need to stop building all this crap and just create a good, you know, reporting tool. That's it. It just reports. Where are you wasting your money? And once I stopped building and made it leaner, I was able to, over the course of the following 2.5 years, earn back all the money I had emptied out of our savings. and it became, for me and one of the co-founders, like almost like a passive income stream for, you know, about 2 years.
Did you do for yourself what you say you want to do for your customers, which is go and talk to potential customers and do that whole analytics research and funnel and all that? Did you do that?
That's funny. It's a great question. One way I learned you need to do that is because initially I did not. Initially, when I kind of overbuilt everything, I felt like, oh, I'm the customer. I know enough, right? I'm definitely the target audience. I encountered one of my friends and mentors, Richard Boardman, who was a director of UX at Google, later helped SlideShare a bunch, and now is at Salesforce. Basically, Richard told me he has an acronym, TTYFU, which is like talk to your fabulous users or effing users. So he basically spanked me. He was like, dude, what are you doing? You got to like stop building, get out and start talking to customers. And that's when I understood that I'd built a lot of stuff I didn't need. And the company was going to be like unsupportable with our small team.
Remember one customer that you talked to that helped finally open your eyes to this stuff? It seems to often just take one person.
Yeah, definitely. One customer was Coit Cleaners, which was like is a franchisor, like carpet cleaning services. They're a pretty big company. And what I realized was the reporting for them was such a big pain because they had all these franchisees, and the head of marketing in the franchisor had no idea what the results and the ROI was for each franchise. That really completely pivoted my product to a multi-location reporting tool.
I see. So you realize all they need is reporting for all these locations. And was it simpler reporting than you were offering?
Yeah, I really simplified it down to just like PPC, you spent this much, you got this many conversions, you had this many phone calls. You can listen to the calls if you want, because I wasn't trying to be a call tracking company, more like a reporting company. But bottom line is your ROAS on PPC is this. Same thing with like Twitter. I figured out kind of a hack to like sniff the referrer, figure out if somebody coming from Twitter made a phone call, right? So I figured out a way to like pretty early on, like how to calculate the hard ROI on social media. And so got a little bit of notoriety there. That helped really sell the product to about 300-400, paying customers.
What was the name of that cleaning company?
Coit Cleaners.
Quit?
Coit, C-O-I-T.
C-O-I-T Cleaners, yeah. I see. Yeah. All right. I think we've got everything here. Actually, there's so much more that I want to cover, like the rest of the Roar process. I want to cover moderated user testing, blended cost per acquisition. But we're at the end of our time here together. I'd love to have you back on at some point to just teach marketing. You up for that?
Sure.
Just teach growth.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. All right. And the website is ROI, like return on investment, works.com. And if you go to the blog, you will very soon see a new blog post direct from George. Does that sound right?
I promise.
All right. Cool. And if you ever get a chance to have dinner with George, hope he's a little bit late, because he's very generous when he's late. That massage was I didn't use a massage myself. I'm not a massage person, but my wife loved it. Soothe is fantastic. I can attest to that. Come right to your freaking house. That's what I love about you guys outside of San Francisco too?
Yeah. So we're actually in 22 cities and 3 countries now.
Oh, I love tech. I know everyone thinks that like, unless you're curing cancer, you haven't done anything meaningful. But if you come to my house and you give a massage, you've done something meaningful. If you bring me a burrito in the middle of the night, you've done something meaningful. I love this stuff. I love the whole tech startup world. All right. But thank you, George, for being here.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you all for being a part of it. Remember my two sponsors. If you want a hosting company, go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you want to finally hire an incredible designer or an incredible developer, not just a pair of hands, but someone who can really think much better than you ever could, at least about design or development, then you've got to go to toptal.com/Mixergy. I'm grateful to them for sponsoring and for all of you for being a part of Mixergy. Bye, everyone.